all that said, Tony, you have become the eye of the storm, the middle of the storm here in USA Rugby in the last 12 months, I guess it's been now.
Yeah, maybe 15 or 16. I don't know about the eye of the storm. I'm just trying to tell a story that kind of needs to be told, you know. And it started out, I was ticked off at the results of a couple of games to the World Cup, asked a few questions.
Here's see if he can get you.
Yes, yep.
Hey, Tony, while they're figuring this out, I think it's so difficult to comprehend everything you're putting out. And I'm in this all day, every day, but to try the depth of the different avenues of rugby.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty fascinating. I mean, if you don't take a good close look at it, you know, you can see why, you know, our top level performance struggles. And there's a whole spectrum all the way down, you know, into the youth game of a lot of frustration and a lot of concern about the lack of direction, and there's a lack of confidence. And I don't want to talk about anything more negative, quite frankly. I'd rather talk about what we can do moving forward.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think for me, that's what I'm most interested in seeing is, I think all of us have been around the game long enough, we understand that there's plenty of flaws in this country with how we're going, and clearly what we've done has not panned out. So the question becomes, what's next?
Right. A few people from the blog, and I really appreciate you guys, the comments you made. Certainly if people think that I enjoy doing this necessarily, that would be a mistake. You know, I'm sticking my neck out. You know, it's nothing that I enjoy, but it's a story that I think needs to be told. It does need to be told, and nothing will change in USA Rugby until there are some significant personnel changes on our board, possibly on the staff.
And to your point, yep. Ben, I guess, how do we unseat or change something that's such an entrenched hierarchy, if you will, for lack of a better term? You know, if we have the structure and these individuals are in place, how do we turn it over? How do we get fresh?
Right. Well, you know, you guys have seen, I've called for several board members to be audited and reviewed for performance, and quite frankly, the entire collective. I think we've had a disservice done to our union. The creation of RIM is a real question mark for everyone involved. There doesn't seem to be anyone that really understands how that does not encumber Dan Payne as the CEO of U.S. Rugby. You know, RIM does not seem to be supporting him at the moment. It seems to be encumbering him, and no one can really tell the story of RIM or the Rugby Channel, or at least we haven't heard it. And I'd like our Congress to do a deep dive and investigate into our board, RIM, the Rugby Channel, the finances, the overspend, the budget, all the issues that are basically, you know, blocking and tackling for running a business.
Tony,
the chairman,
can you please tell our listeners what RIM is and what it's supposed to be?
Sure. Well, Rugby International Marketing, also known as RIM, is an entity that was created a couple of years ago by the CEO of USA Rugby at the time, with the approval of the board, I believe. And it is a for-profit company that was owned 100% by USA Rugby. So it was a for-profit company that was going to support the nonprofit. And the feeling was the members of the board basically said, you know, we weren't able to get any traction on sponsorship and funding because we're a non-for-profit. They felt that a for-profit entity could be a little sexier to sponsorship money, which at the heart of it, I can certainly understand.
Right.
But since that time, RIM has sold 35% we have sold 35% of RIM and 10% of the Rugby Channel for what I believe is a total of $7.5 million. So there has been $7.5 million brought in by RIM, to the best of my understanding, and I believe that a lot of that money is being pushed into the Rugby Channel.
So,
so
we're financing this thing, which don't even get me started on the Rugby Channel. It drives me absolutely insane for so many
years. Well, it's just, you know, hey, look, at least it's a start, right? I mean, I don't want to be complicit in this thing because I don't see how, with the cost of content, I just don't see how the cost of content is ever going to make sense for the small number of listeners we have.
Right.
Apparently, to get the Aviva Premiership, the rights to that for a country like the United States, I believe, is, you know, in the multiple $100,000s per season. And if you, you know, if you backtrack that on $5 a month subscription, you got to have a lot of subscriptions just to pay for the content. So I'd love to hear how it's going to work. I mean, I'm all for this thing working. I just have a lot of questions, and so do a lot of other people. And quite frankly, I'm just the tip of the spear, you know, gathering information and asking some questions.
Okay, so let's move to the organizational part of USA
Rugby. Tony. Okay. This is Jack speaking, and
Hey, Jack.
You know, Bill tries to feed me your information, but I like I've told Dumont that when I meet someone, I never criticize them. Or when I read something by them, I don't criticize them because I become too familiar with them. So if I hear it from somebody else, it's okay. I still don't criticize them. But, you know, from what Dumont seems to be well onto this, as does Bill. My question would be, and I've often thought of this because I'm very critical of the United States Rugby Football Union, is if you've got money and a collection of well-funded friends, why don't you attempt a coup? Why don't you put together your own union and present it to the World Rugby Board and see if you can start something new and fresh, if that needs to be done? Dumont doesn't think the kitchen cabinets need to be repainted. I sort of think they do, but I don't know how to do that.
Well, I think you're talking about blowing up the house, not just painting the cabinets.
Right, yeah, but there's a big difference. I think the kitchen cabinets can be redone. I don't want to burn the whole thing down.
No, absolutely.
Like,
and that's what I think.
NFL
I,
and AFL.
Guys, I absolutely don't. No. That would be well, believe me, I've had two people send me very long proposals on what a new rugby union could look like. I haven't published them because, we're not even close to that yet, and it doesn't need to get there.
Right.
But quite frankly, the Congress, the USA Rugby Congress, must hold our board of directors to account. They must question what's going on, what the decisions have been made, the RIM decision and the Rugby Channel decision. It must happen, and it must happen ASAP, or we're never going to get out of this
right.
Tidal wave we're in.
Are you sticking to your Dickens theory of we've always got our hand held out for money?
Recently, in the last month, I've become exposed to a number of guys who are huge donors to USA Rugby, and it's fantastic. It's absolutely, men and women, by the way, it's absolutely fantastic. The volume, the amount of money spent, you know, just last year alone on some Olympic support and other things is phenomenal. But first, you know, you'd like that to be, you'd like the handout to be sort of the extra, the dessert, so to speak. We have to create a program at USA Rugby, a brand that we can sell and market to the outside world. And if you guys wouldn't mind, I'd like to just talk a little bit about what I foresee happening in the near future about professional rugby, what's going to happen to the organization and structure of rugby in America. Okay. So there's, you know, we all, many people saw the fantastic event that was put on by the Austin Huns this weekend, their match against Ombak. It was a great game, a great presentation. The online presentation was fantastic. And guys like the Austin Huns, Seattle Saracens, to name one, I'm sure there are many other clubs, Glendale, you know, those are all grassroots, from the ground up clubs looking to create professionalism or semi-professionalism. And we need to keep that. The grassroots effort is amazing. But we have to realize that, you know, there's going to be a limited number of people that can provide the kind of money that's just going to be required to create some real professionalism in this country. So while we're looking at the grassroots, I am personally knowledgeable on, you know, a lot of overseas money that is waiting to be deployed in the United States. So that might be that might come in the fold of two forms. There are Premiership clubs in the UK. There are Irish clubs. There's a couple of French clubs that I know of that are looking to deploy some money in the United States. And I believe what's going to happen is what should happen is that our USA Rugby should perform a full club and participation audit. We should audit every single club, ask them what they are, who they are, how many they are, what they want to be, what the clubs want to be. And we should be able to mass that. We should be able to mass that information to understand where our top 8, 10, 12 hubs are in the United States. Clearly, you know, one of them would be San Francisco, right? One of them would, I'm sure, would be Denver. You know, I think we'd have four on the East Coast, four on the West Coast, and four dividing up the middle of the country. And I think we would call these major hubs. And I think what we're going to see is Premiership clubs like a Harlequins or a Saracens or a Leicester or like Rossing might be doing with the Austin Huns. I think they're going to come in with money. I think they're going to come in and try and create a Premiership type environment in the major hubs where they can create an academy for not only U.S. players, but for their players to come over here. And I believe ultimately there will be a competition between these major hubs that will be our professional league. And I think there will be affiliations in each of the major hubs. Just like, for example, in Romania, the Saracens have a team called the Timișoara Saracens. They, you know, the Seattle Saracens here might be that representative. And I think that I do believe that significant money will come in that way. I know there's some interest from South Africa. I know there's some interest from Australia.
Harlequins.
And the Harlequins, of course, who are RIM investors. So I see that major hub scenario working to, you know, we recognize we have some geographical problems in this country. You know, we're a continent. We're a continent of, unto ourselves, and we have, you know, we have 20 cities the size of Ireland, right, or whatever. I don't know the data, but you know what I mean. The size of New Zealand, for example, right? So we do need to solve a geographical problem, and I believe the grassroots combined with the major hub concept of money coming in from overseas, and USA Rugby facilitating those type of partnerships, creating the opening for professionalism in the country. Now we don't want to get into that can of worms. We don't want to get into the can of worms of what exists now with pro rugby. But the way I see it is these major hubs, and then minor hubs, smaller cities surrounding or smaller rugby organizations around these towns building up into this major hub. So, for example, if you have an aspiring rugby player that's 15 or 16, that player could either go to the team's academy. So, for example, let's say the Harlequins and San Francisco. Okay, so the Harlequins would put an academy into San Francisco, and maybe some of the existing academies that exist, like an Atavis or some of the other academies, will negotiate to be that particular elite team's, that hub's academy. So we don't, you know, it's not like we're going to have to reinvent the wheel and for these English, French, Australians to come over and create their own academies. That doesn't have to happen. There are plenty of academies in the country. Quite frankly, I think the academy system and the camp system needs to be normalized a little bit. It seems to be a little bit of a free-for-all. And, I don't know about the quality control, but I'm sure the spectrum of quality ranges quite largely. So I see students 16, 17, 18, they would either be playing in the academies or, of course, in the United States, we have an incredible university program. And I think we need to exploit the university program more than it is already and use the university program as a feeder to our national teams and to higher level elite play, which will be happening in these major clubs. I'd like to talk about the university program a little later, because I'm sure there are a lot of people that have questions. But go ahead.
But I've thrown this off to Dumont, and mm-hmm. I don't think Bill has been here, and Janet, I don't think she responded, but Dumont particularly really didn't get behind it. He didn't poo-poo it. He just simply said it was unfeasible. And my idea was, why not in this country develop, we have enough Islanders, and a completely Islander team, an all-Islander team, an all-military team, and an all-university team, in addition to our selected USA team, and let those teams kind of battle it out for...
We already have those.
We don't have a... We have a, what's the name of the All-Islander team?
Called Pacific Islanders. They compete in the sevens tournament every year.
We're not
as a,
talking
as a club.
About that. I'm talking
as
about
a club.
A complete,
but you want, yeah, you want to create a competition between these four teams, but...
And, I mean, that's just... And I don't know if it could work. I mean, I'm looking to make the USA national side better.
Right,
that's kind
right,
of
and,
what
and,
I'm
that's, and I understand that in
and
my.
So let's talk about
making the US national team better. That's a subject I like to talk about. You know, you guys being experienced rugby guys know that the quality of rugby improves the higher level you pay. The more intense, the more physical, the faster, and as frequently as possible. The more high-level games we get, the better players play. Now, let's just start at the high school level, right? This is why we need this club audit. We need to figure out what teams want to be great and what teams just want to play a little bit of rugby socially. And quite frankly, between you and me, never those two teams should meet, okay? Cal just won a game, you know. 92-16, I think. You know, that doesn't do anyone any good, right? I think if anyone that's been in a 92-16 game or 70-0 game realizes the winners didn't get anything out of that, and the losers certainly didn't get anything out of that.
This was banned by 120 at one time.
Yes, that's correct. In 1994, I believe, 20 years ago. So the clubs, this club audit will tell us, you know, who are the aspiring clubs. And we've got to create competitions around the fact that the clubs that want to produce elite players and want to be elite teams, these teams have to play each other on a constant basis. What's going on in the U.S. now with the, you know, the PRP and the ARP and who knows what the heck Pro is and the MRC and, you know, the Red River, there's some great teams and there's some great rugby players, but we're just not getting enough high-level competition for our high-level players as often as we should. And it is clear as day to me the reason why England is so strong. Look at that Premiership. They are banging heads 20, 30 times a year against the best players in their country. Our best players in our country might be lucky to get two or three.
Well, Dumont has often remarked that we just don't have an adequate, sufficient, high level of pool players. We just don't have a pool of really great players.
I think Tony hit it on the head. I think our pool is growing. I think I've said it 1,001 times. It's you develop that pool of players by having them do exactly what Tony just said, by having them play extensively at high level. I love it that the Falklands had to go to Chile and play in Chile and Uruguay last week. Like, we need – it's the only way you're going to get better. You don't get better like – you know, I don't get better by playing another D1 men's club that's god awful.
That's right.
90% of them are.
That's right. Well, let's step back a minute, because I think it was Jack who talked about maybe having the Pacific Islanders and the military and whoever play. Yeah, I don't off the top of my head. I don't see that necessarily as a solution. But what I do see as a solution, guys, is as a businessman, is we need to step back and we need to create a strategic plan. And everyone can throw out any idea that they want, but until we have a plan that we can operate and align against and where investors can see some stability, we're just going to continue to be chasing our tails. So, this strategic plan that I've talked about and that I believe the CEO is coming out with, and we should see it, it should include but not be limited to topics like top-tier competition, like we just discussed. Create openings for professional competitions and franchises. It's got to address pathways for players and clubs, and I think our two major pathways for our 18 to 22-year-olds is clearly the universities and the academies that will be created at the elite hubs. And by creating the universities, I'd like to create a super university-type league where you know, Cal isn't beating teams by 92-16, but those players get 20 games a year where they're banging heads, you know, and they might not finish 19-1, right? I'm sure a lot of these coaches don't want to finish 19-1. They'd like to say, hey, we finished 15-5 and we had 20 very hard matches. And if we can figure out how to create these competitions starting in high school and youth, look at all the 70-0 games. If we can get this started at high school and youth, move it up into the college where the colleges that want to be the elite teams are playing the other elite teams. And then in the club ranks, the club teams that want to be elite teams are playing the elite teams. And this has to come from a strategic plan, and we're going to need to change some geography around. We're going to need to study, and this has to come from a club audit. We need to know who plays.
You're talking about the club audit, but I don't understand. I'm a little thick. I don't know what a club audit is.
A club audit would be this. We need to know who plays, when and where. We need to recognize all of our potential members, not just the current players. We need to wrap our arms around who the past players are, who just the fans are, so that we can market to these people. How many people have played rugby that would love to get back into the game just to watch an occasional game that don't even know about it? The number is in the tens, maybe even hundreds of thousands, right? The results of a club audit need to look at things like retention data, right? Why is a 15-year-old kid getting in the game but leaving at 17, right? We need to figure out, you know, what we can do better to improve retention. I would say, you know, the result of one of these club audits, we could encourage men and women's clubs to merge when applicable, so that there would be an economy.
I'm going to ask you about women. What's your thought about women? Because they play an important role in my mind, because they're
it's unbelievable.
Than the men.
For me, you know, kind of not really paying attention to the game for a good 15 years. You know, back when I played, the women's game was slightly different demographic and just a slightly different reputation. And now I am just blown away by just the quality of individual, the quality of human being, the quality of play, the intensity. And I've just come to realize that these women love playing the game and love being around the game for the exact same reason I do. And you know, or we all do, right?
And let us not forget, in 1999, I think the women won the Rugby World Cup.
1991, that's a fact. They won the first Rugby World Cup, yes.
And they've finished as runner-ups twice. So, I mean, they've had a far more successful
run than we have.
Yeah, than the men, although we still concentrate far and maybe too much on the men. And that's just my...
Well, you know, so here's a, you know, part of my strategic plan would be, you know, part of the... A plan would be to look at how we're going to deploy moving forward our national teams. And at some point, we've got to have a plan that doesn't include, you know, okay, let's try and find a couple of better players and let's try and get a better coach. That's organic growth. That's organic type thinking.
Do you not think the coach we have right now is one of the top coaches?
I don't know him. I'd rather not comment. Okay. Right. I'd rather not comment. I mean,
okay,
you know, I'm looking at some results, and I've heard. I love.
Oh, I mean, based
Coach
on results, you're right.
I love Coach Mitchell's interviews. Absolutely, I think he's obviously an unbelievable rugby mind.
He's a high
profile. You know, I'd love to see him reside in the United States, which I believe is going to happen. I think any national team coach, we can't afford a celebrity coach. We need coaches that are going to come here. There should have been three or four national. Well, let's call it two or three national team coaches / representatives at that Cal Cup final, and Ombach versus I can't remember Life West.
Ombach or Life West.
Life West. You know, I know that Dave Hodges were there. That's great. He's the new general manager for the high performance for USA Rugby. You know. Wouldn't have that been a great opportunity for a coach to be there, you know, to talk to some of the players that are in the program? There are probably 6-8 players just in that final that are in the program. And so, you know, I that's a little bit critical. I'd rather not talk about the on-the-field stuff because that's a little bit of out of my purview right now.
There is a rumor going around that if Alistair Coetzee loses the job in South Africa, that John Mitchell is lobbying to take that position. That's just a rumor.
I can't comment on that. You know, this is a tough job, right?
I'm just throwing that out there because
you're just rumor mongering about stuff that we can't control. But what we can control is
to organic growth that Tony was referring to. What we can't control is creating a strategic plan to build this ship and get it right.
Tony, have you seen the push for, this is Bill again, have you seen the push for women wanting equal pay?
You know, I have. We're getting down there in the weeds a little bit, but, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit. I think it's a disaster that this week the women's quarterfinals.
Every Monday, Tony. We're going to have you back, okay?
No problem. I'd be glad to.
You know, I'd like you to take a look at the Six Nations. The women are going to be broadcast live in the Six Nations, and I'd like to really take a good hard look at how successful that is.
Absolutely. I think that's a great step in the right direction, no question. I think it's really disappointing that in Sydney, the ARU is going to have the women's quarterfinals be off the main stadium, and that's a big point of contention, I know, for the women, and it should be. I think that's just a really foolish move. I actually had a couple of messenger interactions today with a couple of the women on the national team, and I sent them that article about the equal pay, and one of them put it really well. She said, you know, we need to play more consistently. We need to provide better entertainment, and we need to prove that we are financially viable in terms of entertaining, bringing in spectators to be able to demand equal pay. And I thought that was very fair. I think obviously we've made progress, but we're nowhere near where we need to be on the equality of men and women. And the way I look at it now is, quite frankly, you know, in my strategic plan, it would include a measure to try and reconnect the Can-Am rivalry, the Canadian-American rivalry, where maybe we have a home-and-home Bledisloe-type series every year where it's a big deal. It's not thrown on at the last minute. People can expect it to happen. It should happen in some of our bigger hubs that we find from our club audit, right? You know, look at where we've put some test matches recently, right? You know, it would just – to be able to build the culture, the rugby culture, you need to have things happen on a consistent basis in the same place. So the fact that we move all of our test matches to these random towns that have very varied success, I think is quite foolish. I think we should pick of our major hubs that we come, and part of the deal about becoming one of the major hubs is you're going to have a place to play that can put some people, because you got to look to get 3,000 to 5,000 people into these stands at some point. And then I think the Can-Am game could probably get 10,000 to 15,000 if marketed right. And I think we could have a men's game, a women's game, an under-20s game, and make it an enormous festival twice a year, home and away. And the level
Sorry,
of
the, you know, off the top of my head, do you know the USA record against Canada?
I do not.
I mean, just take it against them.
I do not.
Like they've played like 57 times, and Canada's won like 40.
So
you're right.
I don't think it's quite that lopsided, but it is.
Check
lopsided,
it out.
Yeah.
Check
I
it
think
out.
It is.
Yeah.
I think it is.
I think that when I last looked, that we had won 14 times.
Okay, but that's even better. I mean, that's even better.
I mean,
right
I
now, I think
saying,
right now
like,
I think we're a better
15.
Team. Right now we're a better team, I believe, and I sure as heck hope we show that in a few weeks up in Vancouver. You know, we think we're in trouble. The Canadians will tell you they're in worse trouble.
I've heard that. Actually, just talking to some Canadians this weekend while we were playing.
Well,
they had a good showing in Wellington.
Yeah.
The difference is, look at the resources we have available in our country compared to Canada. I mean, we should be miles ahead of our northern neighbors, and we're not. And congratulations to them in the sevens this weekend. They were great, really great.
Yeah.
Let me get back though a little.
Go
ahead. Let me get back, if I could, just talking a little bit more about the strategic plan and the major hubs. I believe that plan has got to come out. It's got to address our structure. It's got to address our financing. We've got to address the competitions level for the men, as I described. The women's is even worse, and college might even be worse. Because the top college teams don't even get to play each other based on the systems that are present now. So, you know, we've got to fix that. I love the Varsity Cup and the professionalism. I mean, that is probably – that whole CRC Varsity Cup thing is is a hugely marketable program, and I love how it's growing like that. We should
NBC picked it up.
We should completely encourage that, and we've got to. You know, there are other great teams out there. You know, obviously the Gales in Moraga, California are an outstanding team. They've won two games this year by a total of, I think it was 202-10 or 202-0.
Yeah, they just had another 100.
And so for me, obviously St. Mary's has a great team, great players, are very well coached. They have a great program. And that's two wasted weeks for their top players, right? I mean, wouldn't it be better if they were playing some games and the final score was 24-21? You know, and so each week that goes by for one of these, let's forecast a prop that's playing for St. Mary's that might forecast 5 years from now into the national team, right? These last 2 weeks, that kid hasn't improved, because he hasn't had the competition to improve. And I think if we step back and look at the competitions and the structure, we have to force our top players playing better players more often. And I'm going to, you know, I'll fall on the sword on that one, because I just know that from personal experience. And I think this is one of the reasons we've let our geography just take over and take advantage of us. I just think this is one of the things we can back in and use our geography to an advantage, not a disadvantage, which is what a lot of people are complaining about.
Well, when you're proposing this hub-centered world, are you proposing that there is outside funding that comes in and supports the structure in each of the hubs?
Well, I'm not saying this is my dream. I'm telling you this is going to happen. I mean, from talking to people in the country, sports rugby executives and sports rugby executives overseas, this is happening right now. And there's a lot of talk going on. There's a number of clubs want to get involved and sort of stick their toe in the water, so to speak. They don't necessarily know how to do that. That's one of the complaints. A lot of people are like, we'd like to come into the U.S. market. We'd like to put a couple $1 million into a program and see what we can get. But we just don't know how to do it, and that's that.
Any close friends on the USA RFU?
Any close friends? What do you mean?
Yeah, who really kind of go
probably not anymore. If I did.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really sure. I was just thinking maybe you know.
No, I mean, you know, the CEO and I have spoken. He's great as far as I'm concerned. He's got the potential to be just a fantastic CEO. He's got all the skills. You know, he's inexperienced for sure, but. He's got the skill sets it takes, so I'm excited about that. People at the USAR, I don't know too many of those people actually.
That's fine.
I know three or four of the board members that I've spoken to at length about some of these issues.
But to follow up on the hub structure, because I just want to follow the idea, are you looking to have one group of investors come in and coordinate the different teams? Are you thinking these are competing group of investors bringing
each hub needs to have a CEO, okay? Wherever there's going to be, you know, ultimately there will be 12, possibly 16 teams in, say, 10 years. This is all, you know, and we've all got to remember, this isn't going to happen tomorrow, but we've got to start today, if that makes sense. None of this is going to... Right, we've just got to stick a line in the sand and say, okay, today is the day we start to get our act together. Because from 1991, when I played, quite frankly, we've retracted on the field and off the field. And I think right now we're at a very, very critical stage. If I may, I think we need to start right now in developing the bid for the 2027 World Cup. And that's a $250 million payday. Okay, we cannot not look at that bid with immediate, you know, salivating mouths, right? We have got to start this Rugby World Cup bid today. And the way that's going to start is by doing a club audit and figuring out which cities are our rugby hubs, which cities will have enough rugby participants to attend elite matches, where they will have academy teams playing possibly university teams, and all that rugby community that we're talking about where the lower levels build in, the participation levels at the bottom of the pyramid move up the scale to high-level performance depending on their aspiration.
But where is the structure coming from that's going to coordinate and get this together? Again, I'm trying to get to
the This point. Has to come in the strategic plan. I mean, someone has to dictate how this is going to look like, or at least create the opportunity for how it's going to look like.
We have a strategic plan.
But so then that's
no, we don't. No, we don't.
It sounds to me like you're expecting that there's going to be one group of investors coming in and seeding the various hubs.
No, there's not one group. There's I've spoken to at least seven different people overseas involved with seven different clubs.
Right. No. I get what you're saying. I understand.
Sounds very, very difficult.
No, I think it is. It's a lot of pieces, but Tony's right. You're seeing it already. Clubs are chomping at the bit to get in here because they know there's money to be made and there's opportunity to be had. And I think for USA Rugby standpoint, I think the strategic plan you're speaking of, and tell me if I'm wrong here, is we have to build a framework to make sure that when these clubs do show up at our doorstep, which they're coming, that they fit into the framework of how we operate and how we want to operate to continue to grow and maximize their influence.
Let me comment. So there's the premiership type money that I'm talking about from the individual clubs. There's also, you know, a pretty big move afoot to put a Pro 12 team and possibly a Super 12 team either into the United States or Canada or both. And I know that the Pro 12 move is pretty far down the track. There's at least two very competent bids to put a team into the United States, and that's going to happen. I mean, it's not a matter of if, guys. It's just when. It's going to happen, and we just need to realize that, and we need to realize that there's going to be overseas money coming in into the United States, and I believe we just need to. We must create some structure about what that looks like. Otherwise, it's just going to continue to be a free-for-all that it is right now.
Blow me away with two things. One is, how do you see your role, for one? And when you said 1991 you played in, Argentina and the United States were at a very parity level, and yet they've just gone way beyond us.
Well, my friend, you know, okay, so who is this talking right now?
Jack,
hi, how you doing? You know, not only Argentina, man. Look at Italy. Look at Japan. You know, our pack was pushed around by Japan in the World Cup in 2015. I mean, that was – I watched that, and I was like, man, times have changed, and we're not in the right direction.
Considering that during the summer before the World Cup, we actually beat them.
Correct. Yep. So, again – we can't criticize the on-field performances of our players and our teams. We're not giving them the resources that they need. We're not giving them the competition at a young age. We're not giving them the competition in college. We're not giving them the competition at the club level. And USA Rugby can help to sort that out. And I believe, I don't know what our board of directors are doing. You know, I know we just added a board member who has a huge marketing background, but it's my belief that we need some people to support Dan Payne that can put some programs together like I'm talking about. I'm not saying these are the programs that will be present, but I'd like to know what other people are thinking. You know, I'd like to know what some of the current board are thinking about this, because before you can market a product, you have to have the product to market. And we've missed building this product. And it's no one's fault necessarily. We just need to rein it in. And we have an opportunity now to create a comprehensive strategic plan that is vetted by 40 sports professionals from around the country and around the world. And we can start to tell, we can create a story, we can tell the story, and then we can sell the story. But right now, we don't have a story to tell. At the
well,
NDS,
just telling me what your role would be. Where do you see yourself?
Well, you know, okay. So I was nominated for a board seat. I did not get it. You know, I would ask. I would serve wherever I was asked to serve. Quite frankly, I'd like to participate.
You're on the outside looking in. I mean, I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm completely on the outside looking in.
How are you going to get on the inside?
Well, quite frankly, right, the way
you
to do that. Well, I absolutely do. Absolutely, I wouldn't be spending the time if I didn't have a huge conviction on how successful we can be as a rugby playing nation. Huge conviction, and I'm inspired by, you know, condescension from overseas. You know, whatever floats your boat in terms of what gets you up in the morning, but that condescension from overseas just resides with me. It's been in my blood since I played the game. And now when I go to watch our team play and it doesn't go as well, that condescension is alive and well from other rugby playing nations, and it just drives me nuts. And I truly believe that we can put this together, but we've got to, you know, from a business perspective, any business, this is a turnaround. It's a startup that's kind of morphed out of control. We just need to bring it in, create a plan, create the structure that I talked about with clubs and competitions, which is the single most important way to improve the quality of your rugby, and start taking a look at that. And then we can start, then we can start talking to sponsors, because we're improving. We've got some competition. We've got professional looking presentations. You know, you've got TV and online guys like the Austin Hunts just put on. That was just so fantastic. That should be the minimum standard for our elite rugby now, as far as I'm concerned. Every single club needs to put on something like that if they're going to take themselves seriously and want to be part of the elite competition. The female on
this, listening to you sounds so refreshing. In fact, I'd like to have it come on again, but the problem that I keep hearing is that you're by yourself somehow. You're sort of,
well, no,
no,
that's not true. I mean,
that's
not necessarily true. I mean, I might call myself the tip of the spear. I'm working with some very, very talented.
I call you Shay.
I'm working with some very talented rugby people from this country, people that played for the national team, people that captained the national team, people that coached the national team, guys that are involved right now in administration. We have a weekly phone call. And you ask how some of these changes can happen. That's got to happen at the Congress level. The Congress has to stand up. Some leadership has to appear in that Congress. Someone's going to stand up and ask some questions, and there are some procedures to remove people or make changes.
Once before we leave, but you know, I kind of do a little bit of writing on the website, and after listening to you, why don't you, you know, maybe we can banter back a bit between the two of us, because I just don't read outside material because I don't want to be influenced.
No problem.
That would be pretty encouraging.
Plus, Tony can come back on.
Yeah, anytime you want.
I'd be delighted to. You know, I got asked by a few people. You know, it's no secret I put out that letter to the Congress, the open letter to, you know, to look at the board. I put it out, and it's been suggested that, you know, I put that out, and that now I need to come out with some ideas that I have for how we take this thing moving forward, and I've tried to describe some of those tonight.
You better take her question right now, because we got less than a minute.
That's what I was just worried about. Certainly appreciate you coming on and would like to flesh out some of these ideas a little bit further, but given that we do just have 1 minute, guys, we got to look forward to next weekend. It's the Sydney Sevens. Come on. This is going
absolutely
to be
exciting. Absolutely.
I am excited that we have got both Kelly Griffiths back and Kirsten Thomas. So we have got a very, very strong line out. We did an absolutely horrible debut in Dubai, not too much better than we did Dubai last year, but I'm hoping that's just a stub of our toe. But we've got some fantastic talent on here. I'm looking forward to seeing some really good things from Nia Tapper as well. Our pool play, we are with Russia, England, and Spain. I like our odds there.
And, Tony, you should carry on a dialogue with Janet, because she's the most passionate, optimistic, maybe not completely informed panelist that we have.
I'd love to.
Ow.
But we all love her very, very much.
I'd love to.
Passionate.
So, I mean, we've got to sign off for the next guy coming in, but I've enjoyed it. And if you talk to Bill, or if you come back next week or –
absolutely. I'd be delighted to. Let's do it. And by that time, I'll have some more –
some more publications. I really appreciate you guys having me on, and thank you for the confidence.
We've got the tape and we've got all the information, and we'll converse.
As I tried, if I may,
we'll be in touch. Bye bye.
Right on. Bye. Bye bye.